The snow fell all around them. She walked as close to Jon Snow as she dared, close enough to feel the mistrust pouring off him, like a black fog. He does not love me, will never love me, but he will make use of me. Well and good. Melisandre had danced the same dance with Stannis Baratheon, back in the beginning. In truth, the young Lord Commander and her king had more in common than either of them would ever have been willing to admit. Stannis had been a younger son, living in the shadow of his elder brother, just as Jon Snow, bastard-born, had always been eclipsed by his true-born sibling, the fallen hero men had called the Young Wolf. Both men were unbelievers by nature, mistrustful, suspicious. The only gods they truly worshipped were honor and duty. "You have not asked about your sister," Melisandre said, as they climbed the spiral steps of the King's Tower. "I told you, I have no sister. We put aside our kin when we say our words. I cannot help Arya, much as I—" He broke off as they stepped inside her chambers. The wildling was within, seated at her board, spreading butter on a ragged chunk of warm brown bread with his dagger. He had donned the bone armor, she was pleased to see. The broken giant's skull that was his helm rested on the window seat behind him. Jon Snow tensed. "You?"
"Lord Snow."
The wildling grinned at them through a mouth of brown and broken teeth. The ruby on his wrist glimmered in the morning light like a dim red star. "What are you doing here?"
"Breaking my fast. You're welcome to cheer."
"I'll not break bread with you."
"Your loss. The loaf's too warm. Hub can do that much at least."
The wildling ripped off a bite.
"I can visit you as easily, my lord. Those guards at your door are a bad shape. A man who's climbed the wall 50 times can climb in a window easy enough. But what good would come of killing you? The crows would only choose someone worse."
He chewed and swallowed.
"I heard about your rangers. You should have sent me with them."
"So you could betray them to the Weeper?"
"Are we talking about betrayals? What was the name of that wilding wife of your Snow? Ygritte, wasn't it?"
The wildling turned to Melisandre.
"I will need horses, 6 good ones, and this is nothing I can do alone. Some of the spear wives penned up at Mole's Town should serve. Women would be best for this, the girls more like to trust them. And they will help me carry off a certain ploy I have in mind."
"What is he talking about?" Lord Snow asked her. "Your sister." Melisandre put her hand on his arm. "You cannot help her, but he can." Snow wrenched his arm away. "I think not. You do not know this creature. Rattleshirt could wash his hands 100 times a day, and he'd still have blood beneath his nails. He'd be more like to rape and murder Arya than to save her. No. If this was what you have seen in your fires, my lady, you must have ashes in your eyes. If he tries to leave Castle Black without my leave, I'll take his head off myself."
"He leaves me no choice."
"So be it."
"Devon, leave us," she said,
and the squire slipped away and closed the door behind him. Melisandre touched the ruby at her neck and spoke a word. The sound echoed clearly from the corners of the room and twisted like a worm inside their ears. The wildling heard one word, the crow another. Neither was the word that left her lips. The ruby on the wildling's wrist darkened, and the wisps of light and shadow around him writhed and faded. The bones remained, the rattling ribs, the claws and teeth along his arms and shoulders, the great yellowed collarbone across his shoulders. The broken giant skull remained a broken giant skull, yellowed and cracked, grinning its stained and savage grin. But the widow's peak dissolved. The brown moustache, the knobby chin, the sallow yellowed flesh and small dark eyes all melted. Grey fingers crept through long brown hair. Laugh lines appeared at the corners of his mouth. All at once he was bigger than before, broader in the chest and shoulders, long-legged and lean, his face clean-shaved and windburnt. John Snow's grey eyes grew wider.
"Mance? Lord Snow."
Mance Rayder did not smile.
"She burned you. She burned the Lord of Bones."
John Snow turned to Melisandre. "What sorcery is this?"
"Call it what you will. Glamour, seeming, illusion. Rilor is Lord of Light, John Snow, and it is given to his servants to weave with it, as others weave with thread."
Mance Rayder chuckled.
"I had my doubts as well, Snow, but why not let her try? It was that, or let Stannis roast me."
"The bones help," said Melisandre. "The bones remember. The strongest glamours are built of such things. A dead man's boots, a hank of hair, a bag of finger bones. With whispered words and prayer, a man's shadow can be drawn forth from such and draped about another like a cloak. The wearer's essence does not change, only his seeming."
She made it sound a simple thing and easy. They need never know how difficult it had been, or how much it had cost her. That was a lesson Melisandre had learned long before Ashai. The more effortless the sorcery appears, the more men fear the sorcerer. When the flames had licked at Rattleshirt, the ruby at her throat had grown so hot that she feared her own flesh might start to smoke and blacken. Thankfully, Lord Snow had delivered her from that agony with his arrows. While Stannis had seethed in defiance, she had shuddered with relief.
"Our false king has a prickly manner," Melisandre told Jon Snow. "But he will not betray you. We hold his son, remember, and he owes you his very life."
"Me?" Snow sounded startled.
"Who else, my lord? Only his life's blood could pay for his crimes, your law said, and Stannis Baratheon is not a man to go against the law. But as you said so sagely, the laws of men end at the wall. I told you that the Lord of Light would hear your prayers. You wanted a way to save your little sister and still hold fast to the honor that means so much to you, to the vows you swore before your wooden god."
She pointed with a pale finger.
"There he stands, Lord Snow. Arya's deliverance. A gift from the Lord of Light. And me."
Reek. He heard the girls first, barking as they raced for home. The drum of hoofbeats echoing off flagstone jerked him to his feet, chains rattling. The one between his ankles was no more than a foot long, shortening his stride to a shuffle. It was hard to move quickly that way, but he tried as best he could, hopping and clanking from his pallet. Ramsay Bolton had returned, and would want his reek on hand to serve him. Outside, beneath a cold autumnal sky, the hunters were pouring through the gates. Ben Bones led the way, with the girls baying and barking all around him. Behind came Skinner, Sir Allen, and Damon Danceforme, with his long, greased whip. Then the Walders riding the grey colts Lady Dustin had given them. His lordship himself rode Blood, a red stallion with a temper to match his own. He was laughing. That could be very good or very bad, Reek knew. The dogs were on him before he could puzzle out which, drawn to his scent. The dogs were fond of Reek. He slept with them oft as not, and sometimes Ben Bones let him share their supper. The pack raced across the flagstones barking, circling him, jumping up to lick his filthy face, nipping at his legs. Hellicent caught his left hand between her teeth, and worried it so fiercely, Reek feared he might lose two more fingers. Red Jane slammed into his chest and knocked him off his feet. She was lean, hard muscle, where Reek was loose grey skin and brittle bones, a white-haired starveling. The riders were dismounting by the time he pushed Red Jane off and struggled to his knees. Two dozen horsemen had gone out, and two dozen had returned, which meant the search had been a failure. That was bad. Ramsay did not like the taste of failure. "He will want to hurt someone." Of late, his lord had been forced to restrain himself, for Barrington was full of men House Bolton needed, and Ramsay knew to be careful around the Dustins and Risewells and his fellow lordlings. With them he was always courteous and smiling. What he was behind closed doors was something else. Ramsay Bolton was attired as befit the Lord of the Hornwood, an heir to the Dreadfort. His mantle was stitched together from wolfskins and clasped against the autumn chill by the yellow teeth of a wolf's head on his right shoulder. On one hip he wore a falchion, its blade as thick and heavy as a cleaver. On the other, a long dagger and a small curved flaying knife with a hooked point and a razor-sharp edge. All three blades had matched hilts of yellow bone. "Reek!" his lordship called down from Blood's high saddle. "You stink! I can smell you clear across the yard."
"I know, my lord," Reek had to say. "I beg your pardon."
"I brought you a gift." Ramsay twisted, reached behind him, pulled something from his saddle, and flung it. "Catch!" Between the chain, the fetters, and his missing fingers, Reek was clumsier than he had been before he learned his name. The head struck his maimed hands, bounced away from the stumps of his fingers, and landed at his feet, raining maggots. It was so crusted with dried blood as to be unrecognizable. "I told you to catch it," said Ramsay. "Pick it up." Reek tried to lift the head up by the ear. It was no good. The flesh was green and rotting, and the ear tore off between his fingers. Little Walder laughed, and a moment later the other men were laughing too. "Oh, leave him be," said Ramsay. "Just see the blood. I rode the bastard hard."
"Yes, my lord, I will."
Reek hurried to the horse, leaving the severed head for the dogs. "You smell like pig shit today, Reek," said Ramsay. "On him, that's an improvement," said Damon Danceforme, smiling as he coiled his whip. Little Walder swung down from the saddle. "You can see to my horse too, Reek, and to my little cousin's." "I can see to my own horse," said Big Walder. Little Walder had become Lord Ramsay's best boy, and grew more like him every day. But the smaller Frey was made of different stuff, and seldom took part in his cousin's games and cruelties. Reek paid the squires no mind. He led Blood off toward the stables, hopping aside when the stallion tried to kick him. The hunter strode into the hall, all but Ben Bones, who was cursing at the dogs to stop them fighting over the severed head. Big Walder followed him into the stables, leading his own mount. Reek stole a look at him as he removed Blood's bit.
"Who was he?"
he said softly, so the other stable hands would not hear. "No one." Big Walder pulled the saddle off his grey. "An old man we met on the road, is all. He was driving an old nanny goat and four kids."
"His lordship slew him for his goats."
"His lordship slew him for calling him Lord Snow. The goats were good, though. We milked the mother and roasted up the kids."
"Lord Snow?"
Reek nodded, his chains clinking as he wrestled with Blood's saddle straps.
"By any name, Ramsay's no man to be around when he's in a rage, or when he's not." Did you find your cousins, my lord?
No, I never thought we would. They're dead. Lord Wyman had them killed. That's what I would have done, if I were him.
Rick said nothing. Some things were not safe to say. Not even in the stables, with his lordship in the hall. One wrong word could cost him another toe, even a finger.
Not my tongue, though. He will never take my tongue. He likes to hear me plead with him, to spare me from the pain. He likes to make me say it.
The riders had been 16 days on the hunt, with only hard bread and salt beef to eat, aside from the occasional stolen kid. So that night Lord Ramsay commanded that a feast be laid to celebrate his return to Barrington. Their host, a grizzled one-armed petty lord by the name of Harwood Stout, knew better than to refuse him, though by now his larders must be well-nigh exhausted. Reek had heard Stout's servants muttering at how the bastard and his men were eating through the winter stores.
"He'll bed Lord Eddard's little girl, they say," Stout's cook complained, when she did not know that Reek was listening. "But we're the ones who'll be fucked when the snows come, you mark my words."
Yet Lord Ramsay had decreed a feast, so feast they must. Trestle tables were set up in Stout's hall, an ox was slaughtered, and that night as the sun went down, the empty-handed hunters ate roasts and ribs, barley bread, a mash of carrots and peas, washing it all down with prodigious quantities of ale. It fell to little Walder to keep Lord Ramsay's cup filled, whilst big Walder poured for the others at the high table. Reek was chained up beside the doors, lest his odour put the feasters off their appetites. He would eat later, off whatever scraps Lord Ramsay thought to send him. The dogs enjoyed the run of the hall, however, and provided the night's best entertainment. When Maud and Grey Jane tore into one of Lord Stout's hounds over an especially meaty bone that Will Short had tossed them, Reek was the only man in the hall who did not watch the three dogs fight. He kept his eyes on Ramsay Bolton. The fight did not end until their host dog was dead. Stout's old hound never stood a mummer's chance. He had been 1 against 2, and Ramsay's bitches were young, strong, and savage. Ben Bones, who liked the dogs better than their master, had told Reek they were all named after peasant girls Ramsay had hunted, raped, and killed back when he'd still been a bastard, running with the first Reek.
"The ones who give him good sport, anyways. The ones who weep and beg and won't run don't get to come back as bitches."
The next litter to come out of the Dreadfort's kennels would include a Kyra, Reek did not doubt.
"He's trained them to kill wolves as well," Ben Bones had confided.
Reek said nothing. He knew which wolves the girls were meant to kill, but he had no wish to watch the girls fighting over his severed toe. 2 serving men were carrying off the dead dog's carcass, and an old woman had fetched out a mop and rake and bucket to deal with the blood-soaked rushes, when the doors to the hall flew open in a wash of wind, and 12 men in grey mail and iron half-helms stalked through, shouldering past Stout's pasty-faced young guards in their leather brigandines and cloaks of gold and russet. A sudden silence seized the feasters, all but Lord Ramsay, who tossed aside the bone he had been gnawing, wiped his mouth on his sleeve, smiled a greasy, wet-lipped smile, and said, "Father!" The Lord of the Dreadfort glanced idly at the remnants of the feast, at the dead dog, at the hangings on the walls, at Reek in his chains and fetters. "Out," he told the feasters, in a voice as soft as a murmur, "now, the lot of you." Lord Ramsay's men pushed back from the tables, abandoning cups and trenchers. Ben Bones shouted at the girls, and they trotted after him, some with bones still in their jaws. Harwood Stout bowed stiffly and relinquished his hall without a word. "Unchain Reek and take him with you,"
Ramsay growled at Sir Alan. But his father waved a pale hand and said, "No, leave him." Even Lord Roos's own guards retreated, pulling the doors shut behind them. When the echo died away, Reek found himself alone in the hall with the two Boltons, father and son. "You did not find our missing phrase." The way Roos Bolton said it, it was more a statement than a question. "We rode back to where Lord Lamprey claims they parted ways, but the girls could not find a trail. You asked after them in villages and holdfasts. A waste of words. The peasants might as well be blind for all they ever see." Ramsay shrugged. "Does it matter? The world won't miss a few phrases. There's plenty more down at the Twins, should we ever have need of one." Lord Roos tore a small piece off a heel of bread and ate it. "Hustine and Aeneas are distressed. Let them go looking if they like. Lord Wyman blames himself. To hear him tell it, he had become especially fond of Rhaegar." Lord Ramsay was turning wroth. Reek could see it in his mouth, the curl of those thick lips, the way the cord stood out in his neck. "The fools should have stayed with Manderley." Roose Bolton shrugged. "Lord Wyman's litter moves at a snail's pace, and of course his lordship's health and girth do not permit him to travel more than a few hours a day, with frequent stops for meals. The Freys were anxious to reach Berriton and be reunited with their kin. Can you blame them for riding on ahead?" "If that's what they did. Do you believe, Manderley?" His father's pale eyes glittered. "Did I give you that impression?" "Still, his lordship is most distraught." "Not so distraught that he can't eat. Lord Pig must have brought half the food in White Harbour with him. 40 wains full of foodstuffs, casks of wine and hippocras, barrels of fresh-caught lampreys, a herd of goats, 100 pigs, crates of crabs and oysters, a monstrous codfish Lord Wyman likes to eat. You may have noticed." "What I noticed was that he brought no hostages. I noticed that as well. What do you mean to do about it?" "It is a quandary." Lord Roos found an empty cup, wiped it out on the tablecloth, and filled it from a flagon. "Manderley is not alone in throwing feasts, it would seem. It should have been you who threw the feast, to welcome me back," Ramsay complained. "And it should have been in Barrow Hall, not this piss-pot of a castle. Barrow Hall and its kitchens are not mine to dispose of," his father said mildly. "I am only a guest there. The castle and the town belong to Lady Dustin, and she cannot abide you." Ramsay's face darkened. "If I cut off her teats and feed them to my girls, will she abide me then? Will she abide me if I strip off her skin to make myself a pair of boots? Unlikely, and those boots would come dear. They would cost us Barriton, House Dustin, and the Risewells." Roose Bolton seated himself across the table from his son. "Barbary Dustin is my second wife's younger sister, Roderick Risewell's daughter, sister to Roger, Rickard, and mine own namesake Roose, cousin to the other Risewells. She was fond of my late son, and suspects you of having some part in his demise. Lady Barbary is a woman who knows how to nurse a grievance. Be grateful for that. Barriton is staunch for Bolton, largely because she still holds Ned Stark to blame for her husband's death." "Staunch?" Ramsay seized. "All she does is spit on me. The day will come when I'll set her precious wooden town afire. Let her spit on that. See if it puts out the flames." Roose made a face, as if the ale he was sipping had suddenly gone sour. "There are times you make me wonder if you truly are my seed. My forebears were many things, but never fools. No, be quiet now, I've heard enough. We appear strong for the moment, yes.
We have powerful friends in the Lannisters and Freys, and the grudging support of much of the North. But what do you imagine is going to happen when one of Ned Stark's sons turns up?
Ned Stark's sons are all dead, Rick thought. Rob was murdered at the Twins, and Bran and Rickon. We dipped their heads in tar.
His own head was pounding. He did not want to think about anything that had happened before he knew his name. There were things too hurtful to remember, thoughts almost as painful as Ramsay's flaying knife. Stark's little wolflings are dead, said Ramsay, slushing some more ale into his cup. And they'll stay dead. Let them show their ugly faces, and my girls will rip those wolves of theirs to pieces. The sooner they turn up, the sooner I kill them again. The elder Bolton sighed. Again? Oh, surely you misspeak. You never slew Lord Eddard's sons, those two sweet boys we love so well. That was Theon Turncloak's work, remember? How many of our grudging friends do you imagine we'd retain if the truth were known? Only Lady Barbary, whom you would turn into a pair of boots, inferior boots. Human skin is not as tough as cowhide, and will not wear as well. By the king's decree, you are now a Bolton. Try and act like one. Tales are told of you, Ramsay. I hear them everywhere. People fear you. Good. You are mistaken. It is not good. No tales were ever told of me. Do you think I would be sitting here if it were otherwise? Your amusements are your own. I will not chide you on that count. But you must be more discreet. A peaceful land, a quiet people, that has always been my rule. Make it yours. Is this why you left Lady Dustin and your fat pig wife? So you could come down here and tell me to be quiet?
Not at all. These are tidings that you need to hear. Lord Stannis has finally left the wall.
That got Ramsay halfway to his feet, a smile glistening on his wide, wet lips.
Is he marching on the Dreadnought?
He is not, unless. Arnulf does not understand it. He swears that he did all he could to bait the trap.
I wonder. Scratch a Karstark, and you'll find a Stark.
After the scratch the young wolf gave Lord Rickard, that may be somewhat less true than formerly. Be that as it may, Lord Stannis has taken Deepwood Mott from the Iron Men and restored it to House Glover. Worse, the mountain clans have joined him, Wald and Norre and Liddell and the rest. His strength is growing.
Ours is greater.
Now it is.
Now is the time to smash him. Let me march on Deepwood.
After you are wed. Ramsay slammed down his cup, and the dregs of his ale erupted across the tablecloth.
I'm sick of waiting. We have a girl, we have a tree, and we have lords enough to witness. I'll wed her on the morrow, plant a son between her legs, and march before her maiden's blood has dried.
She'll pray for you to march, Rick thought, and she'll pray that you never come back to her bed.
You will plant a son in her, Roose Bolton said, but not here. I've decided you shall wed the girl at Winterfell. That prospect did not appear to please Lord Ramsay.
I laid waste to Winterfell, or had you forgotten?
No, but it appears you have. The Iron Men laid waste to Winterfell and butchered all its people, Theon Turncloak. Ramsay gave Reek a suspicious glance.
Aye, so he did. But still, a wedding in that ruin?
Even ruined and broken, Winterfell remains Lady Arya's home. What better place to wed her, bed her, and stake your claim? That is only half of it, however. We would be fools to march on Stannis. Let Stannis march on us. He is too cautious to come to Barrowton, but he must come to Winterfell. His clansmen will not abandon the daughter of their precious Ned to such as you. Stannis must march or lose them. And being the careful commander that he is, he will summon all his friends and allies when he marches. He will summon Arnulf Karstark.
Ramsay licked his chapped lips.
And we'll have him.
If the gods will it.
Roose rose to his feet.
You'll wed at Winterfell. I shall inform the lords that we march in 3 days and invite them to accompany us.
You are the warden of the north. Command them.
An invitation will accomplish the same thing. Power tastes best when sweetened by courtesy. You had best learn that if you ever hope to rule. The Lord of the Dreadfort glanced at Reek. Oh, and unchain your pet. I'm taking him.
Taking him? Where? He's mine. You cannot have him.
Roos seemed amused by that. All you have, I gave you. You would do well to remember that, bastard. As for this Reek, if you have not ruined him beyond redemption, he may yet be of some use to us. Get the keys and remove those chains from him. Before you make me rue the day I raped your mother.
Reek saw the way Ramsay's mouth twisted, the spittle glistening between his lips. He feared he might leap the table with his dagger in his hand. Instead, he flushed red, turned his pale eyes from his father's paler ones, and went to find the keys. But as he knelt to unlock the fetters around Reek's wrists and ankles, he leaned close and whispered,
"Tell him nothing, and remember every word he says. I'll have you back, no matter what that Dustin bitch may tell you. Who are you?"
"Reek, my lord, your man. I'm Reek. It rhymes with sneak."
"It does. When my father brings you back, I'm going to take another finger. I'll let you choose which one."
Unbidden, tears began to trickle down his cheeks.
"Why?" he cried, his voice breaking. "I never asked for him to take me from you. I'll do whatever you want. Serve, obey. Please, no."
Ramsay slapped his face. "Take him," he told his father. "He's not even a man. The way he smells disgusts me."
The moon was rising over the wooden walls of Barrowton when they stepped outside. Reek could hear the wind sweeping across the rolling plains beyond the town. It was less than a mile from Barrow Hall to Hardwood Stark's modest keep beside the eastern gates. Lord Bolton offered him a horse.
"Can you ride?"
My lord, I think so.
"Wharton, help him up." Even with the fetters gone, Reek moved like an old man. His flesh hung loosely on his bones, and Sir Alan and Ben Bones said he twitched, and his smell. Even the mare they'd bought for him shied away when he tried to mount. She was a gentle horse, though, and she knew the way to Barrow Hall. Lord Bolton fell in beside him as they rode out the gate. The guards fell back to a discreet distance.
"What would you have me call you?" the lord asked, as they trotted down the broad, straight streets of Barrowton.
"Reek, I'm Reek. It rhymes with Reek." "Reek," he said, "if it please my lord."
"My lord," Bolton's lips parted just enough to show a quarter inch of teeth. It might have been a smile. He did not understand.
"My lord," I said.
"My lord," when you should have said "my lord." Your tongue betrays your birth with every word you say. If you want to sound a proper peasant, say it as if you had mud in your mouth, or were too stupid to realize it was two words, not just one.
"If that please my lord."
"Better. Your stench is quite appalling."
Yes, my lord. I beg your pardon, my lord."
"Why? The way you smell is my son's doing, not your own. I am well aware of that." They rode past a stable and a shuttered inn with a wheat sheaf painted on its sign. Reek heard music coming through its windows. "I knew the first Reek. He stank, though not for want of washing. I have never known a cleaner creature, truth be told. He bathed thrice a day and wore flowers in his hair as if he were a maiden. Once when my second wife was still alive, he was caught stealing scent from her bedchamber. I had him whipped for that, 12 lashes. Even his blood smelled wrong. The next year, he tried it again. This time, he drank the perfume, and almost died of it. It made no matter. The smell was something he was born with. A curse, the small folk said. The guards had made him stink so that men would know his soul was rotting. My old maester said it was a sign of sickness, yet the boy was otherwise as strong as a young bull. No one could stand to be near him, so he slept with the pigs. Until the day that Ramsay's mother appeared at my gates to demand that I provide a servant for my bastard, who was growing up wild and unruly. I gave her Reek. It was meant to be amusing, but he and Ramsay became inseparable. I do wonder, though, was it Ramsay who corrupted Reek, or Reek Ramsay? His lordship glanced at the new Reek with eyes as pale and strange as 2 white moons. What was he whispering whilst he unchained you?
He said to tell you nothing.
The words caught in his throat, and he began to cough and choke. Breathe deep, I know what he said. You ought to spy on me and keep his secrets. Bolton chuckled. As if he had secrets. Sir Alan, Luton, Skinner, and the rest. Where does he think they came from? Can he truly believe they are his men?
His men,
Reek echoed. Some comment seemed to be expected of him, but he did not know what to say. Has my bastard ever told you how I got him? That he did know, to his relief.
Yes, my lord. You met his mother whilst out riding, and were smitten by her beauty.
Smitten? Bolton laughed. Did he use that word? Why, the boy has a singer's soul. Though if you believe that song, you may well be dimmer than the first Reek. Even the riding part is wrong. I was hunting a fox along the Weeping Water when I chanced upon a mill and saw a young woman washing clothes in the stream. The old miller had gotten himself a new young wife, a girl not half his age. She was a tall, willowy creature, very healthy-looking, long legs and small, firm breasts, like 2 bright plums. Pretty in a common sort of way. The moment that I set eyes on her, I wanted her. Such was my due. The maesters will tell you that King Jaehaerys abolished the lord's right to the first knight, to appease his shrewish queen. But where the old gods rule, old customs linger. The Umbers keep the first knight too, deny it as they may. A certain of the mountain clans as well, and on Skagos, well, only heart trees ever see half of what they do on Skagos. This miller's marriage had been performed without my leave or knowledge. The man had cheated me. So I had him hanged and claimed my rights beneath the tree where he was swaying. If truth be told, the wench was hardly worth the rope. The fox escaped as well, and on our way back to the Dreadfort, my favourite courser came up lame. So all in all, it was a dismal day. A year later, this same wench had the impudence to turn up at the Dreadfort with a squalling, red-faced monster that she claimed was my own get. I should have had the mother whipped and thrown her child down a well, but the babe did have my eyes. She told me that when her dead husband's brother saw those eyes, he beat her bloody and drove her from the mill. That annoyed me. So I gave her the mill and had the brother's tongue cut out, to make certain that he did not go running to Winterfell with tales that might disturb Lord Rickard. Each year I sent the woman some piglets and chickens and a bag of stars, on the understanding that she was never to tell the boy who had fathered him. A peaceful land, a quiet people, that has always been my rule.
"'A fine role, my lord.'
"'The woman disobeyed me, though. "'You see what Ramsay is? "'She made him. "'Her and Reek, always whispering in his ear about his rights. "'He should have been content to grind corn. "'Does he truly think that he can ever rule the North?'
"'He fights for you,' Reek blurted out. "'He's strong.
"'Bulls are strong. "'Bears. "'I've seen my bastard fight. "'He's not entirely to blame. "'Reek was his tutor, the first Reek, "'and Reek was never trained at arms. "'Ramsay is ferocious, I will grant you, "'but he swings that sword like a butcher hacking meat.
"'He's not afraid of anyone, my lord.'
He should be. Fear is what keeps a man alive in this world of treachery and deceit. Even here in Barrowton, the crows are circling, waiting to feast upon our flesh. The Serwins and the Tallhearts are not to be relied on. My fat friend, Lord Wyman, plots betrayal. And Horsbane, the umbers may seem simple, but they are not without a certain low cunning. Ramsay should fear them all, as I do. Next time you see him, tell him that.
Tell him? Tell him to be afraid?
Reek felt ill at the very thought of it.
My lord, if I did that, he'd...
I know, Lord Bolton sighed. His blood is bad. He needs to be leeched. The leeches suck away the bad blood, all the rage and pain. No man can think so full of anger. Ramsay, though... His tainted blood would poison even leeches, I fear.
He is your only son?
For the moment. I had another once, Domerick, a quiet boy, but most accomplished. He served 4 years as Lady Dustin's page, and 3 in the Vale as a squire to Lord Redfort. He played the high harp, read histories, and rode like the wind. Horses... The boy was mad for horses, Lady Dustin will tell you. Not even Lord Rickard's daughter could outrace him. And that one was half a horse herself. Redfort said he showed great promise in the lists. A great juster must be a great horseman first.
Yes, my lord, Domerick, I have heard his name.
Ramsay killed him. A sickness of the bowels, Maester Euthor says. But I say poison. In the Vale, Domerick had enjoyed the company of Redfort's sons. He wanted a brother by his side, so he rode up the Weeping Water to seek my bastard out. I forbade it, but Domerick was a man grown, and thought that he knew better than his father. Now his bones lie beneath the Dreadfort, with the bones of his brothers who died still in the cradle. And I am left with Ramsay. Tell me, my lord, if a kinslayer is accursed, what is a father to do when one son slays another? The question frightened him. Once he had heard Skinner say that the bastard had killed his true-born brother, but he had never dared to believe it.
It could be wrong. Brothers die sometimes. It does not mean that they were killed. My brothers died, and I never killed them. My lord has a new wife to give him sons.
And won't my bastard love that? Lady Walder is a Frey, and she has a fertile feel to her. I have become oddly fond of my fat little wife. The two before her never made a sound in bed, but this one squeals and shudders. I find it quite endearing. If she pops out sons the way she pops in tarts, the Dreadfort will soon be overrun with Boltons. Ramsay will kill them all, of course. That's for the best. I will not live long enough to see new sons to manhood, and boy lords are the bane of any house. Walder will grieve to see them die, though. Reek's throat was dry. He could hear the wind rattling the bare branches of the elms that lined the street.
My lord, I...
My lord, remember?
My lord, if I might ask, why did you want me? I'm no use to anyone. I'm not even a man. I'm broken, and the smell.
A bath and a change of clothes will make you smell sweeter.
A bath? Rick felt a clenching in his guts. I would sooner not, my lord. Please. I have wounds, and these clothes, Lord Ramsay gave them to me. He said that I was never to take them off, save at his command.
You are wearing rags, Lord Bolton said, quite patiently. Filthy things, torn and stained and stinking of blood and urine. And thin. You must be cold. We'll put you in lamb's wool, soft and warm, perhaps a fur-lined cloak. Would you like that?
No.
He could not let them take the clothes Lord Ramsay gave him. He could not let them see him. Would you prefer to dress in silk and velvet? There was a time when you were fond of such, I do recall.
No, he insisted shrilly. No, I only want these clothes, Reek's clothes. I'm Reek, it rhymes with peak.
His heart was beating like a drum, and his voice rose to a frightened squeak.
I don't want a bath. Please, my lord, don't take my clothes.
Will you let us wash them, at least?
No, no, my lord, please.
He clutched his tunic to his chest with both hands and hunched down in the saddle, half afraid that Roose Bolton might command his guardsmen to tear the clothes off him right there in the street. As you wish. Bolton's pale eyes looked empty in the moonlight, as if there were no one behind them at all. I mean you no harm, you know. I owe you much and more.
You do?
Some part of him was screaming.
This is a trap. He's playing with you. The son is just the shadow of the father.
Lord Ramsay played with his hopes all the time.
What? What do you owe me, my lord?
The North. The Starks were done and doomed the night that you took Winterfell. He waved a pale hand, dismissive. All this is only squabbling over spoils. The short journey reached its end at the wooden walls of Barrow Hall. Banners flew from its square towers, flapping in the wind. The flayed man of the Dreadfort, the battle-axe of Serwyn, tall hearts pines, the merman of Manderley, old Lord Locke's cross-keys, the umber giant and the stony hand of Flint, the hornwood moose. For the Stouts, chevronny, russet and gold. For Slate, a grey field within a double treasure white. Four horse heads proclaimed the four Risewells of the Rills, one grey, one black, one gold, one brown. The jape was that the Risewells could not even agree upon the colour of their arms. Above them streamed the stag and lion of the boy who sat upon the iron throne 1,000 leagues away. Reek listened to the vanes turning on the old windmill as they rode beneath the gatehouse into a grassy courtyard where stable boys ran out to take their horses. "This way, if you please," Lord Bolton led him toward the keep, where the banners were those of the late Lord Dustin and his widowed wife. His showed a spike crown above cross long axes. Hers courted those same arms, with Roderick Risewell's golden horse head. As he climbed a wide flight of wooden steps to the hall, Reek's legs began to shake. He had to stop to steady them, staring up at the grassy slopes of the great barrow. Some claimed it was the grave of the first king, who had led the first men to Westeros. Others argued that it must be some king of the giants who was buried there, to account for its size. A few had even been known to say it was no barrow, just a hill. But if so, it was a lonely hill, for most of the barrow lands were flat and windswept. Inside the hall, a woman stood beside the hearth, warming thin hands above the embers of a dying fire. She was clad all in black, from head to heel, and wore no gold nor gems, but she was highborn, that was plain to see. Though there were wrinkles at the corners of her mouth, and more around her eyes, she still stood tall, unbent, and handsome.
Her hair was brown and grey in equal parts, though she wore it tied behind her head in a widow's knot.
"Who is this?"
she said.
"Where is the boy? Did your bastard refuse to give him up? Is this old man his... Oh, God! Be good! What is that smell? Has this creature soiled himself?"
"He has been with Ramsay. Lady Barbary, allow me to present the rightful lord of the Iron Islands, Theon of House Greyjoy."
"No," he thought, "no, don't say that name. Ramsay will hear you. He'll know, he'll know, he'll hurt me."
Her mouth pursed.
"He's not what I expected."
"He is what we have."
"What did your bastard do to him?"
"Remove some skin, I would imagine. A few small parts, nothing too essential."
"Is he mad?"
"He may be. Does it matter?" Reek could hear no more.
"Please, my lord, my lady, there's been some mistake."
He fell to his knees, trembling like a leaf in a winter storm, tears streaming down his ravaged cheeks.
"Oh, I'm not him. I'm not the turncloak. He died at Winterfell. My name is Reek."
He had to remember his name.
"It rhymes with freak."
Tyrion. The Selessori Coran was 7 days from Volantis, when Penny finally emerged from her cabin, creeping up on deck like some timid woodland creature emerging from a long winter sleep. It was dusk, and the Red Priest had lit his night fire in the great iron brazier amidships, as the crew gathered around to pray. Makaro's voice was a bass drum that seemed to boom from somewhere deep within his massive torso.
"We thank you for your son that keeps us warm," he prayed. "We thank you for your stars that watch over us as we sail this cold black sea."
A huge man, taller than Ser Jorah, and wide enough to make two of him. The priest wore scarlet robes, embroidered at sleeve and hem and collar, with orange satin flames. His skin was black as pitch, his hair as white as snow. The flames tattooed across his cheeks and brow, yellow and orange. His iron staff was as tall as he was, and crowned with a dragon's head. When he stamped its butt upon the deck, the dragon's maw spat crackling green flame. His guardsmen, 5 slave warriors of the Fiery Hand, led the responses. They chanted in the tongue of old Volantis, but Tyrion had heard the prayers enough to grasp the essence.
"Light our fire and protect us from the dark, blah, blah. Light our way and keep us toasty warm. The night is dark and full of terrors. Save us from the scary things and blah, 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 some more."
He knew better than to voice such thoughts aloud. Tyrion Lannister had no use for any god, but on this ship it was wise to show a certain respect for Red Relor. Jorah Mormont had removed Tyrion's chains and fetters once they were safely underway, and the dwarf did not wish to give him cause to clap them on again. The Selessori Coran was a wallowing tub of 500 tons, with a deep hold, high castles fore and aft, and a single mast between. At her forecastle stood a grotesque figurehead, some worm-eaten wooden eminence with a constipated look and a scroll tucked up under one arm. Tyrion had never seen an uglier ship. Her crew was no prettier. Her captain, a mean-mouthed, flinty, kettle-bellied man, with close-set, greedy eyes, was a bad Syvess player and a worse loser. Under him served 4 mates, freedmen all, and 50 slaves bound to the ship, each with a crude version of the cog's figurehead tattooed upon one cheek. "No nose," the sailors liked to call Tyrion, no matter how many times he told them his name was Hugo Hill. 3 of the mates and more than 3/4 of the crew
were fervent worshippers of the Lord of Light. Tyrion was less certain about the captain, who always emerged for the evening prayers but took no other part in them. But Makoro was the true master of the Selasori Koran, at least for this voyage.
"Lord of Light, bless your slave Makoro, and light his way in the dark places of the world," the Red Priest boomed, "and defend your righteous slave, Banero. Grant him courage, grant him wisdom, fill his heart with fire."
That was when Tyrion noticed Penny. Watching the mummery from the steep wooden stair that led down beneath the stern castle, she stood on one of the lower steps, so only the top of her head was visible. Beneath her hood, her eyes shone big and white in the light of the night fire. She had a dog with her, the big grey hound she rode in the mock jousts.
"My lady,"
Tyrion called softly. In truth, she was no lady, but he could not bring himself to mouth that silly name of hers, and he was not about to call her girl or dwarf. She cringed back.
I did not see you.
Well, I am small.
I was unwell.
Her dog barked.
Sick with grief, you mean?
If I can be of help, no.
And quick as that, she was gone again, retreating back below to the cabin that she shared with her dog and sow. Tyrion could not fault her. The crew of the Selasori Koran had been pleased enough when he first came on board. A dwarf was good luck, after all. His head had been rubbed so often and so vigorously that it was a wonder that he wasn't bald. But Penny had met with a more mixed reaction. She might be a dwarf, but she was also a woman, and women were bad luck aboard ship. For every man who tried to rub her head, there were three who muttered maledictions under their breath when she went by.
"And the sight of me can only be salt in her wound. They hacked off her brother's head in the hope that it was mine. Yet here I sit, like some bloody gargoyle, offering empty consolations. If I were her, I'd want nothing more than to shove me into the sea."
He felt nothing but pity for the girl. She did not deserve the horror visited on her in Volantis any more than her brother had. The last time he had seen her, just before they left port, her eyes had been raw from crying, two ghastly red holes in a wan pale face. By the time they raised sail, she had locked herself in her cabin with her dog and her pig, but at night they could hear her weeping. Only yesterday he had heard one of the mates say that they ought to throw her overboard before her tears could swamp the ship. Tyrion was not entirely sure he had been japing. When the evening prayers had ended, and the ship's crew had once again dispersed, some to their watch and others to food and rum and hammocks, Makoro remained beside his night fire, as he did every night. The Red Priest rested by day, but kept vigil through the dark hours, to tend his sacred flames so that the sun might return to them at dawn. Tyrion squatted across from him and warmed his hands against the night's chill. Makoro took no notice of him for several moments. He was staring into the flickering flames, lost in some vision. "Does he see days yet to come, as he claims?" If so, that was a fearsome gift. After a time, the priest raised his eyes to meet the dwarf's.
"Hugo Hill," he said, inclining his head in a solemn nod. "Have you come to pray with me?"
"Someone told me that the night is dark and full of terrors. What do you see in those flames?"
"Dragons," Makoro said, in the common tongue of Westeros.
He spoke it very well, with hardly a trace of accent. No doubt that was one reason that the High Priest, Banero, had chosen him to bring the faithful lore to Daenerys Targaryen.
Dragons old and young, true and false, bright and dark, and you, a small man.